This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Human memory's a tricky thing. Developments in neurobiology and digital technology lead us to questions about the very nature of memory. And then there's the whole issue of what we choose to remember and why. Our interest in this link between memory and identity is reflected more and more in popular culture. Here's a clip from the BBC sci-fi show Black Mirror.
You know, half the organic memories you have are junk. Just not trustworthy.
Colleen works in brain development.
With half the population, you can implant false memories. Just by asking leading questions in therapy, you can make people remember getting lost in shopping malls they never visited, getting bothered by paedophile babysitters they never had.
So there's a clip from the BBC show Black Mirror, and now a play on stage at Man Bites Dog Theatre examines the relationship between memory, identity, and technology. The play is called Marjorie Prime. It tells the story of an 85-year-old woman named Marjorie who finds companionship in artificial intelligence. The AI is designed as a younger version of her late husband. Marjorie is experiencing memory loss, and it is the job of the AI, or the Prime, as the play calls it, to help her remember and reimagine herself and her past. Marjorie Prime is on stage at Man Bites Dog Theater in Durham through Saturday, May 13th, and we're going to get a preview today. Joining me first is Jules Odendahl-James, who is the dramaturg for the production. Welcome back to the program, Jules.
Thanks, Frank. It's nice to be back.
So we've got technology, both digital technology and the amazing technology of the human mind. Tell us more about this story.
Well, and also I want to say that the fact that it's happening in a theater, which is its own technology, sort of combining those two things together. The theater is in and of itself a kind of memory box where we negotiate both what we see and experience through the play, and then certainly it's hopeful that we take those experiences and fold them into our own, which is why we go to see plays. But the play itself is interestingly set sort of future time, but is also hearkening very much back to past, right? All of these struggles about how we remember, what our relationship of our memories are to who we are as people, these are things we've been struggling with for eons as we figure out sort of what how we evolve as people. So I think that even though the play is a future-based play, like Black Mirror, it more sort of helps us reflect on what is happening now and around us.
Yeah, and you talk about the various frames of consciousness and memory and the theater being one of them. So it puts us in mind of that. So not only do we see the play and take the story and then kind of take it away, but we also come to the theater, right, with a body of memories and ideas about things. And the playwright and the actors have to understand that and believe it. Otherwise, they won't be able to communicate. So
that's right. And at its heart, I think this play is about families. And it's about how families remember and how we exchange the remembrance. And sometimes when a member of the family is no longer there or sometimes doesn't seem to remember the way we would like them to remember, or we've all negotiated that in our families we won't talk about X, mm-hmm. and then someone forgets that rule and begins to speak right. about it, how does that change the dynamic? And how do you, both when you think about parents and children, when parents need their children to become their parent or become right. someone who helps guide them through their daily lives, how does that change the dynamic of the family and how does that change role and identity within a family?
And any family that has experienced this knows what can experience some of the theme of this play, which is when you take on that role and you have a couple of siblings, you were all there. You were all there for this entire period when this parent was bringing you up. But each of you has a very different experience of that, and it's now going to be manifest in very different ways.
Right. And the person who stands outside of that, so we also have an in-law who's a character, and that person is able to negotiate family dynamics slightly differently. But yet they, too, have a stake in how they relate with their spouse, and their negotiation with their identity within the family is something of their own particular journey.
All right. So set this up for us. Now the technology or the digital technology, how does the Prime work in all of this?
So the Prime is a blank slate. And in some sense, he's this space of identity that you can certainly feed a certain amount of information to it. We actually went back, or what struck me the first time I read this was I think it was a Twilight Zone episode called The Electric Grandmother, about a young girl who loses a family member and her father goes to a shop to create a grandmother for her. And the child proceeds to sort of negotiate that grandmother who knows everything and has looked a grandmother, but she resists her because she's not her grandmother, she knows. So the idea of Toso too, where does someone's relationship lie? Does it lie in someone you've actually experienced things with? Or can you have a representation of that person? And as long as they're experiencing things with you in the now, are they the person who you need them to be? Are they the person who you knew before?
And story, of course, is very important, whether or not we share this common background and remember that story. But your humanity is also important. You have to look like the thing that could plausibly have experienced this, right? And this gets back to some very ancient ideas about mimicry and sort of how we as humans respond to other humans.
Right. And how when you one of the wonderful lines I love is that about the primes or about even our identities, she's made up of the things that we say to her. And that idea of if it responds to the AI consciousness that's in the play, but it's also about our own people, right? Our family members. We learn to become, we speak like our parents, we develop mannerisms like them, we look like them. These are all things that we imprint upon ourselves, and it's how we come to know ourselves and know that person in our world.
A little bit like the famous Turing test. If you're responding to a machine and you think it's a human being, it's got consciousness. That's the Turing test, right?
That's right.
So tell us more about, I'd like to do at least one scene, maybe two, but maybe we should set up a little more of the plot so that we understand the role of the prime and kind of what's supposed to happen and how this would look.
So I think
on stage.
The opening is basically our introduction to the play. The scene that you all are going to do is introducing Walter and how Walter and Marjorie are come to communicate with each other, what each other relies upon the other for, and what in helping Marjorie remember, how much of helping her remember is also the chance to reconstruct that memory.
Walter being the prime.
Mm-hmm.
So we will, in this scene, I think we're going to see Marcia Edmondson, who is playing Marjorie, and Derek Ivey, who plays the role of Walter or the prime. And maybe you can do this scene for us, would you?
Marjorie, where are the dishes? We both know what no dishes means.
It means I haven't been eating.
Even a spoonful of peanut butter?
You sound like them.
I sound like whoever I talk to.
Let's talk about something else.
I could tell you a story. You liked that the last time.
I'll have to take your word for it.
I could tell you about the time we went to the movies.
We went to a lot of movies.
But one time, we saw my best friend's wedding.
My best friend's wedding?
There's a woman, Julia Roberts. For a while, it was always Julia Roberts. And she is in agreement with her best friend, her male best friend, that if they're not married by a certain age, then they'll marry each other. And she's about to remind him of the agreement, but it turns out he's already fallen in love with this nice blonde, Cameron Diaz. And so Julia Roberts spends the whole movie trying to ruin things between her friend and Cameron Diaz, which is not very sympathetic behavior for America's sweetheart. But it's all okay in the end. And she has a gay best friend who delivers one-liners.
Did I like it?
You said you wanted a gay best friend afterwards.
Did I get one?
I'm afraid I don't have that information.
Why did you pick that story? Why did you pick my best friend's wedding?
It's the night I proposed to you.
Oh, Marjorie, the things you forget. You were trying to tell me, and I wouldn't let you.
That's all right.
Kind of unfortunate, isn't it?
What?
Julia Roberts forever etched upon our lives. What if we saw Casablanca instead? Let's say we saw Casablanca in an old theater with velvet seats, and then on the way home, you proposed. Then by the next time we talk, it'll be true.
You mean make it up?
That is a scene from the play Marjorie Prime, on stage now at Man Bites Dog Theater in Durham through Saturday, May 13th, with Marcia Edmondson and Derek Ivey. We'll hear from Michael Brockie a little bit later on. But I want to ask you, as a wonderful scene, plus there's a great moment in there, too, where Walter, this AI, is implanted with a memory. And you can sort of recite the plot and maybe the time we spent together. But I think the little aside, you know, for a while it was always Julia Roberts, this kind of commentary on how we felt about every movie having Julia Roberts is really humanizes it. It was kind of a nice moment in that bit. But anyway, it's all a wonderful scene. And Marcia, I wonder about you having to play a character with memory loss who's not quite. How do you prepare for a role like that?
Well, I've had experience with that with my own family members, actually. something that my own mother dealt with for a while. So it's something I've been pretty close to.
It's just, again, I sort of marvel at the ability of actors to do this, and I know it's your job, so I won't marvel much longer. But it does amaze me, because you have to be coherent, you have to be in complete control of this stuff, and of course the role you're playing is somebody who's lost command of some of that.
Right, and not just memory, but even aside from the dementia, she's lost a lot of control of her life. Mm-hmm. And she's very aware of that, and so her own reality is shifting, and then she has this other new element to relate to, and starts sort of discovering how she can interact in a new way with this old relationship.
Because you're reconstituting the relationship on the fly. It's been there. We know as the audience, it's a long-standing relationship, but you're trying to put it back together.
She realizes she can redefine it.
Yeah.
In the way that she can't with her daughter, who's the other main
character,
and that sort of the stuckness between how their relationship moves for both of them, I think, is part of the journey of the play.
So many of us don't want things to change and would like it to be stuck back in that one pleasant moment.
Or we would also like the things that we don't like to be changed and the things that we do like to stay the same. So the level of control we want to exert on ourselves and other people, I think, is a negotiable. It's what the play sort of lays bare because of the loss of memory and the introduction of the AI as a new force of, you know, experience and operation in the house.
Derek Ivey, let me ask you what it's like to play a man machine in a way. It's fascinating because it's one that is implanted with stories, and so that's kind of the average hard drive. There might be a way to play that mechanically, but it's also learning as it goes. It's picking up these algorithms and becoming much more plastic in its relationship.
Right.
That's an interesting role to prepare for, I would think.
Definitely. one thing that I find intriguing is Marjorie is losing her memories, and Walter Prime is building his memories simultaneously. So Walter is trying to help preserve her memories, and he has a function of being a companion and being a therapy of sorts for her. But simultaneously, he's learning who he is, he's learning who she is, and he's constantly learning how to be more human or how to appear more human. So throughout his interactions with her, he learns like the concept of making things up, that everything is not necessarily a fact, or learning about a joke. You know, what's a sense of humor and how to be playful as opposed to just exchanging information.
It's that lovely moment at the end of The Taming of the Shrew when Petruchio and Kate start playing with the old man they see on the road, and Petruchio treats the old man like a beautiful young woman, and Kate's looking at him like, what are you doing? And suddenly realizes, yeah, why not? And they both sort of blossom into their full humanhood. And that, I think, is one of the themes in that moment in that play, which is that humanity is about being able to constitute your own story.
And that's one of the reasons that I think, again, this play is about technology, but it's about really consistently about human. What does it mean to be human, and how do non-human elements learn from human beings? And then how do we see our humanity reflected back in them in ways that we can't control and have to negotiate? It's a learning process and maybe revelatory for us.
I wonder if we could do another scene right now. Can you set it up for us?
So I believe this one is with the John, who's the son-in-law, who is partly family recorder. So he's someone who's really into the primes as a tool, and so wants to take information and collect them from Marjorie to give to Walter to better his understanding.
One time your father and I went to the city before Christmas. It was a business trip, and I came along. We must have left you with the Burnsides, and we must have seen a show and stayed at a nice hotel and looked at the department stores with the Christmas lights. But all I remember is sitting on a park bench, just sitting and watching these big orange flags in the park. These orange sort of flags everywhere.
Orange flags.
Or more, what's the color? The spice. The Spanish, very expensive.
Saffron.
And it didn't matter that it was cold because it was so pretty just to watch all the saffron next to the blue-white snow. Rows and rows, like Buddhist monks marching into the trees.
And I just remember sitting on one of those benches with your father and not wanting to get up. Because if we got up, that would mean we had to start the rest of our lives. What are you doing?
I'm writing down what you said.
I will have to be more careful.
Just to remember. And if you want, we can tell Walter Prime.
That is a scene from Marjorie Prime, on stage now at Man Bites Dog Theater in Durham through Saturday, May 13th. My guests are actors Marcia Edmondson, Derek Ivey, and Michael Brocky. Also with us, the show's dramaturg, Jules Odendahl James, and we're talking about that today on The State of Things. Michael, tell us more about your character, John, the son-in-law.
Well, I seem to be the enabler. I'm the one that seems most interested in having this new technology. I'm kind of a technology geek. I like the idea that there's this prime who can speak with other primes and is able to use non sequiturs and is able to, you know, so I feel like I'm the one that says, let's do this to my wife, that it's really going to be helpful. The idea that, according to the people who sold this to us, this is better than television, you know, the idea that you can have someone to interact with. So
is oral surgery, but go ahead.
right. And so my relationship with Marjorie is a wonderful thing. It reminds me of my own relationship with my mother-in-law. We're really close. And in fact, my wife likes to say, you would marry my mother. And it's true. Yeah. I adore this woman. And in this show, I certainly adore Marjorie. And Marcia and I have a good relationship. So I think that playfulness comes through.
And it gets to what Jules was saying about this using technology to show us precisely or get us to meditate on precisely what is humanity. As a son-in-law, you're an outsider, so you inherit some of these stories. You hear them, and that brings you into the family, right, to some extent. And then again, once you're in, you become part of some of these stories later on.
Yes, and I think it's really important to remind her of who she was, and my wife doesn't necessarily agree with that. She likes the idea of kind of editing out some of the things that were not so nice to be around, and I want to remind her of who she was and where she came from.
Yeah, and it also gets into that old game that you can play with any married couple about you both being there and asking you to tell the story and have two different accounts of the same episode.
Right, and I think the negotiation too about, you know, John too through the course of the play interacts with primes, and he's a real fervent believer in them until he has a sort of different encounter with them, and then he changes his mind too about exactly what the limits of this kind of technology is, but also when you have to lay bare the opportunity to reconstruct your relationship with someone, the temptations that you want to give into about that are also the things that once you start to reconstruct, you're like, I'm actually doing harm. Yeah. This is not what I wanted, right? This is changing things in a way that I might be able to control, but what does that actually do to my relationship or the thing that I want to hold the most dear?
Right. And it also allows us to question what would happen if we just let go of those things and let this relationship occur in real time.
Right.
And let it evolve, which brings us back to the theater as this kind of memory box, because, of course, that's what actors are doing when they're doing it well, as you've done today. You're responding in real time. You're not reading a script or memorizing a script. You're responding to each other with the benefit of lines that have already been written. But so tell us again about the role, because the theater plays a role in this play, right? And in some ways, I mean, the theater is as a structure.
It is. And I think that, you know, we've tried to, this is of Jordan's plays, which tend to run the gamut of very kind of wild constructions of place. This is one that's actually rather domestic. But I think in the staging and the work that the set designer has done, and Derek also did the costumes, I think there's a gesture to a domestic space as a place where we perform, where we negotiate, where we work with different objects, and there's rituals and practices that make up, that help us understand who we are and our roles in the family. And I think that is something that you get to see in a sort of heightened way in relationship to this play.
My guest today, Jules Odendahl James, who is a dramaturg for the play Marjorie Prime. And we had also talked with actors Marcia Edmondson, Derek Ivey, and Michael Brocky. Marjorie Prime on stage at Man Bites Dog Theater in Durham through Saturday, May 13th. And you can find out more at our website. But I want to thank all of you for being on the program. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Coming up, the music of Joshua Gunn. Stay with us.